All right, so two things to get us going tonight after a drab, largely uncompetitive game for much of the evening. One is that I got tons of work done during that game. Let me tell you, boy, I didn't do a single pitching change tonight. So I work on some of the other podcasts on the network. I caught up on a lot of work. The bosses are going to be very pleased. Two, as it is now well after midnight here in the East Coast, just after 1 a.m. Eastern, we are officially, that means, 16 days away from the trade deadline, July 30th, the trade deadline. So I have a sneaking suspicion, with one game left before the All-Star break, which goes later today, I suppose, here in the East Coast, but we are going to be watching the Twitter feeds, X feeds of people like Jeff Passan and Ken Rosenthal and other MLB insiders to see what deals slowly leak over the next 2 weeks in a bit. But ooh, tonight, a 12-1 defeat for the Jays in a game that, honestly, somehow, a 12-1 score suggests a game that is not close. I actually feel like it felt even less close than that final score somehow suggests. Honestly, if we did a show on Canada soccer losing to Uruguay at Copa America in the third place game and the Raptors' first summer league game of the offseason, it would probably be more interesting than whatever we're going to talk about in the next like 25 to 30 minutes. Honestly, like if you want to call or text about either of those, you know what? I'm game. Show Ali with you. You're listening to Jays Talk. Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Give me a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text me as well, 590-590, name and location. The people's text line always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. Tonight was actually a Star Wars night at Chase Field in Arizona, so I suppose this makes this game either the Attack of the Clones or Rise of Skywalker, i.e. truly horrible in every aspect. The best part actually was the Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Stormtrooper bobblehead giveaway. So I think my main thought from tonight is that maybe I can sweet talk Ben Nicholson Smith into saving me one of those things. He's out there with Hazel, so that looked pretty cool. We'll make it a quick one tonight. I actually think, I said this before a couple ways, you know, different times during the season, and I'm curious where you guys are at on this these days, but for me, a big part of the frustration for the most part is simply, I just like to watch baseball. And like, you're pretty likely to catch me watching a random, I don't know, Angels Brewers game because baseball, I don't know how often those teams play each other, but baseball is fun to watch. I'll watch pretty much most games versus like, I don't know, how likely is it that I'll watch like Predators Kings on a random Thursday night, for example, in the NHL. Actually, the Predators might be good this year, so are probably going to be good this year. So maybe I would watch that. But my point being is that, generally speaking, baseball and good baseball, more specifically, is what I love, and I know you guys love that as well. And we just have not seen long stretches of good baseball from the Jays this season. Like, that's putting it pretty lightly, but they have not looked great in Arizona after looking pretty good in Seattle and San Francisco. It's just been a bad mix of all the bullet points we talk about, none of them pretty much going right in these last couple of games, right? A bad mix of starters not playing well, defense not being super sharp, the offense not getting anything going, the bullpen playing very poorly, and then you sprinkle in odd strike zones and just like, you know, sprinkle in the regular bad luck that most teams experience on a regular basis, then you get what you get tonight. A 12-1 loss for the Jays, and they have now lost a series in Arizona, and they'll try and salvage it with the remainder of the game, which goes later today at Chase Field. Let's go to the text line. 590-590, name and location. Whit from Brights Grove, Ontario. Show, I'm pushing the panic button. I'm hitting it and smashing it with a hammer. That's fair, honestly. Like, the team has not looked particularly very good, and it just, I don't know that this game in particular necessarily is what they are, because I mean, we did just see them win 2 of 3 in both Seattle and San Francisco, and I think the conversation was largely pretty positive after those series. So, but also, like, I don't think the team was that good either, right? Like, as with most things, the truth usually falls somewhere in the middle, and they're not 12-1 bad, but they're also not like taking 2 of 3 on the road for most teams good either, right? So, I mean, at this point, I'm not sure what's left to be salvaged on the, in the 2024 season. But then again, we're just waiting for the trade deadline at this point. Like I said, 16 days away. That's all we're waiting. Battler and Branford. Is it safe to assume that nobody of consequence will be canned between now and first pitch tomorrow? Absolutely absurd level of ridiculousness. I can't believe Atkins is still permitted to direct this ship. Schneider is still permitted to manage this crew. I'm a 45-year-old Jays fan. I'm totally disgusted. Have a nice night. Thank you, Battler, from Brantford, Ontario. Thanks for staying up late, honestly. I'm impressed that you stayed up so late to watch a game that ended 12-1 for the other guys. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, the team is not good, right? I would be surprised, like, to the text specifically, I would be surprised if someone was fired, like, tonight, given that there is one game to go in the All-Star break. Now, were they to make a change over the course of the All-Star break, I still would be surprised. That would be less surprising than them doing it, like, but like, especially given that it's like 1 a.m. Eastern, and the next game starts at 4 p.m. Eastern. So I don't know, like, it seems unlikely they're going to make some kind of massive change, but yeah, I'm not really sure. Like, it's like I said many times as well, are you just really shuffling the deck chairs in the Titanic? Probably, right? Probably. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones, get to as many of your phone calls in this quick edition of Jays Talk as possible. Let's go to Gumby right here in Ontario. Where are you calling from, Gumby? Where in Ontario are you?
I am calling from Port Colborne, Ontario.
Okay, all right. What's up?
Joe, I'm telling you this. This front office and the coaching staff has to be fumigated. This organization has systematically taken a World Series contender and turned it into a mediocre show. I'm just telling you that the fans of the Blue Jays deserve better.
Hey, I feel you, Gumby. Thanks for the call. Just a reminder. No spite. I know it's late. I know this is like Jays Talk after dark. And I wonder about the WRTC, CRTC, pardon me, being allowing us to do that. But you know, you can't do that. But hey, I do agree that generally speaking, you know, I've said this a billion times, but you know, after a 12-1 loss, certainly worth saying it again, that the leash on the front office, and I mean, you know, I forget who said this last night. It might have been Guy. I honestly forget who said this last night. I apologize if I misattribute this. But, you know, like, John Schneider getting fired, for example, I think is like the last domino that could fall right at this moment. It's the last card to be played by the front office specifically, by these guys who are currently in charge. Because, you know, if you're not winning over like a sustained amount over a longer period of time, how many organizations, and I don't have this, I should really look it up, honestly, because I say this all the time. I should really look it up to see how many times this has happened. But like, how many organizations get to fire essentially three managers in the span of 9 years? Again, like I would wager very few, if not none, right? Without you also getting fired, which is why I think we haven't seen that domino fall. And yeah, I mean, like, yeah, well, maybe I've heard a lot of people say DeMar LoHale is very well liked in the clubhouse. I guess you could make Don Mattingly the manager. He's been a manager before. But I mean, like, would it really make a difference? Probably not, right? Like, the problems with this team are relatively systemic, which is why I think a lot of people call for Shapiro and Atkins to get the axe versus only Schneider. Ultimately, I think when we're having this conversation in the offseason, we're having this conversation before, you know, like March of 2025, I have a feeling the conversation will be about three entirely new people, or at the very least it should be. Very least it should be, I'll tell you that. Let's go to the phones. 416, or back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Alan in Toronto. Is this Alan in a cab, or is this a different Alan?
Retired. I used to be in a cab, but I'm retired now. Yesterday, the ninth inning, by the way, the attendance, average attendance in Blue Jay land is 33,513.
Okay.
So the fans are doing their part, just too bad they can't hit, run, and pitch. You know, it would be great if they could. I'd like to talk about the ninth inning yesterday. Carroll and Marte, they both executed a perfect double steal. And then they intentionally walked Christian Walker, one out. And Varshaw was playing straight away. The outfield should have been playing like Rovers, you know, in a softball game, because you know, you have to be in position to catch the line drives and the Texas leaguers. If it's hit over your head, you may as well let it drop because the runner is going to tag and score anyway, especially Corbin Carroll. He's he's known for his speed. So that's one of the criticisms I have for Schneider. You know, he should have had the infield, the outfield playing shallow because, like I was saying, you know, they're in great position. They're in better position because you're going to catch the line drives and Texas leaguers. So I've seen that in Major League Baseball, too. The outfielders are playing straight away when there's less than two out and the winning run is on third. So that's my big criticism against Schneider. You know, he has to be told that the outfield has to be playing in.
What do you think, Alan, before I let you go, you think a managerial change would make a significant difference if the GM/players are the same?
No, I don't think it makes much difference. You know, that's the big rap I have against him. That's the only rap I have against him. He's doing his best. And like I said, he can't hit pitch or field. He can't do any of those things. So it's not going to make much difference if they bring in a different manager.
Hey, Alan, thanks for the call. I hope you're having a good night. Thanks for staying a Blade for me. I see some texts here as well. John from Battler again, bro, John Schneider should have been canned in May. Like, I mean, look, I guess, I suppose, right? But it's just, I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure. Like, even if it was DeMarlo Hale, I'm not really sure a lot of massive different decision making processes would have taken place, right? We just heard, the only reason I say it is because we've heard so many times from the front office, mostly from Ross Atkins. And I think this, it's also a fair criticism to say, okay, like he kind of word salad-y when he talks, you know, it's pretty opaque, all things considered. So if that's the case, I don't know how much you really take his words into consideration, but he has like just had multiple chances over the course of like the last year plus to say like, yeah, everything is on John Schneider. And he has said that at times, but so many other times he's like walked it back to say, yeah, it's a collaborative decision-making process. And like, I read that to say John Schneider does not make the final decisions. Right. And if that's the case, then like, I get, you could sure fire John Schneider, but like the team's probably still going to be pretty bad, all things considered. Right. Like Jason in Scarborough on the text line, this management team fired Charlie Montoya when the team had a winning record. While I don't think firing Schneider now will make a difference, how do they justify him still having a job with their record being the worst it's been in years? And again, I think that's the simple fact is if they fire him and nothing changes, and I don't really think a lot has happened to suggest that a lot would change if you change the manager, right? So if they were to fire him and nothing changes for the rest of the year, then would that not put a more direct spotlight on like you yourself, the GM/president? I think it would. I honestly think that's where we're at, because you're right. We've seen managers get fired for way less in other teams, for the Blue Jays themselves, in other sports. I 100% agree. And if it was a different sort of situation, like if John Schneider had been brought in instead of Charlie Montoya, he probably already would have been fired. Like if the situations were reversed, right? I'm not sure a lot would have changed. Again, I'm not saying John Schneider does not deserve any blame. He absolutely deserves blame. Everyone deserves a piece of the blame pie these days. Everyone's eaten from that pie these days. But boy, it just feels like having this conversation just feels like it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. Like it's all the same essentially. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Chris in St. Catharines staying up late. Chris, what's up?
I just want to talk to you. I think that last night's loss, not tonight's, last night's, had more of an effect on their demeanor and how they just were horrible. I really do. I think that they had to do it against San Francisco. The same thing happened, but it was a little bit more wacky, so they got through that one and they won the series. Then it happens again, first game against Arizona. I think it demoralized them, just like things saying on Sportsnet, it demoralized them, and I think that's the problem. And as far as Schneider's made way more mistakes. He made a mistake by putting Trevor Richards in again after what he did against San Francisco. He put him in the same spot to do the same thing, only a different way. It wasn't a home run this time, but that's what I think. And I think that if you're going to see any fires, you're going to see either the GM and the president gone, and somebody in the interim takes over, and then whoever they bring in is going to want their own coach, because they usually do. They want the bench coach that they want.
Yeah.
But that's what I think is going to happen there.
Sure. Chris, thanks for the
call. I'll listen to your comments.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for the call, man. I appreciate you joining me so late. Staying up late for me here in Ontario. So, okay, so a couple things there. Okay, let's do the Trevor Richards thing. I'll say this. Trevor Richards deserves the blame for what happened last night. Dron Schneider also wears some blame for what happened last night, certainly as well. The reason, I think, if you're like splitting it between the two of them, I'll make it like 75% Richards for me and 25% Dron Schneider, because mainly because even after all the terrible pitching Trevor Richards has done, unfortunately, over the last like four games, not including tonight. So four games going into, including last night's ball game, I should say, because obviously Richards didn't pitch tonight. You know, he was not put in a high leverage situation in the sense of the team's top of the order was kind of passing him by. He got to see Christian Walker. If I'm remembering correctly, Christian Walker was batting cleanup last night. That was the first batter he saw. It was an out. He got the next batter. It was an out. Or no, it was a walk to the fifth batter. Got the out on the sixth batter. So now he has two outs, a runner on. You're up by two. And you, in theory, should be able to get batters 7-9, right? Like before the order turns over again. And Alec Thomas comes up to bat, a guy who at that point in the season had a batting average of sub 200. And even after what had gone on, like, I just feel like it's incumbent on the guy on the mound to like deliver against the guy who has been, let's be honest, bad, right? And so I think that's why I can, in that particular situation, place more of it on Richards, because like, you're being paid millions of dollars. You should execute your pitches, right? And he didn't. And that's why I think like there's a little bit on Dron Schneider. But I mean, gosh, like after a certain point, like the guy has just got a pitch, right? But anyways, I agree that their body language, to Chris's other point, it just doesn't look great, right? I remember having a conversation with some athletes, like not only in baseball, but people who have been on the station, on the network over the last couple of years. And I remember asking them, I think it was on a weekend show we were doing, you know, during the fall or something, Leafs were playing, we were doing a show until the game ended. And I remember asking this person about like, what do players think of when trades are made? Like in the sense of like, you know, do they know really, do they voice really like what they require when it comes to the team's deficiencies and like what they don't really need when it comes to the team's strengths? And I think to a person, every athlete, both president and former, I've ever had this conversation with, have all said yes to a person. Like they all know that, you know, if the bullpen is playing particularly poorly, then they expect the front office to go out and get them a bullpen arm, right? If they know they need like a top line forward, then they know the GM has to go out and get them a top line forward. Like if they know the front court is lacking, then that guy's got to go out and get a front court mate for whoever, right? I all players, I think, are aware of this. And I think to Chris's point, there are so many parts of this roster that require attention for the conversations that we have on a nightly basis largely be about like who's getting dealt, shipped out of town and who's getting traded. I got to think like when you, that plus them playing poorly, which is what's gotten them into this mess in the first place, has got to be like, it's got to be demoralizing, right? That is like their body language doesn't look great. I mean, I've heard Barker say this a bazillion times, but I mean, the truth is that ultimately these sports are supposed to be fun. And I mean, yeah, there were some fun moments in Seattle. There were some fun moments in San Francisco, but ultimately don't see a lot of fun being had, certainly in Arizona. And it's kind of a tough way to go into the All-Star break. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to Ryan in Innisfil. Ryan, what's up?
Good evening, show. How we doing?
You know, could be better.
Yes, sir. I want to touch on a couple points from the callers from the other night. The first one, I believe it was Guy from Maple, the boy. He was kind of saying that, like, you think Dron Schneider is kind of sort of like that last domino that has to fall for real accountability comes on to Ross and Mark, something along those lines.
Right.
And, I completely agree. Like, it's not so much Dron Schneider's fault, because he has a pretty piss poor team to throw a lineup together with in the first place. But he does have to go, man. Like, this team is missing, like, accountability. Like, accountability is integral for a massive business or a massive group of people to succeed. You have to be accountable for your mistakes and learn from these mistakes and grow from these mistakes. And it doesn't feel like there's a maturity level from the coaching staff or even from the front office to take that accountability upon themselves to say, you know what, yeah, I've screwed up here. I've made a mistake here. And I have to pay the consequences for the mistake that I've made. It's very selfish of the front office not to fire John Schneider. It's selfish to John Schneider himself because it's not like it's going to be easy for him to get a job. It just keeps getting worse. His resume literally gets worse by the day. And even for the front office, it's like, you think you're going to get a job anywhere? You can't even look the media in the face and tell the truth. It's all like backhanded stab in the back compliments. It's insane. And then I believe it was Adam who spoke after me yesterday. He's a little more measured. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, he made some really good points. And a lot of the points were about what Mark Shapiro has brought to this team from a business aspect. And where we have renovations to the Rogers Center, everything's going well. He's got more money than we've ever got as a franchise in general. That's wonderful, man. I would rather watch a good Blue Jays team play at my local YMCA in the bleachers. I would much rather watch a good baseball team than sit in some beautiful stadium and watch garbage. I'll tell you what, I was in the stadium game five, 2016, when we were playing the Kansas City Royals, and that place was rocking. Was the Rogers Center a dump? Yes, it was. It was my dump, and I loved it, and my team was awesome, and I love that even more. It doesn't matter what the stadium looks like. It matters what the product is on the field, and they need to take responsibility for it, and I don't know where that comes from. I don't know if it comes from ownership. I don't know where it comes from, but it needs to come soon, and like, I wish it was more of a democracy for the fans so we could just be like, okay, you're gone, you're gone, you're gone, and we need something new. Like a little stockholder action, a little shareholder action, but unfortunately that's not the case. And I don't even really have questions or anything, Cho. I'm kind of just venting a little bit. I'm so broken, man. I'm calling every night. I'm sorry, but like, this is just killing me, man. I love the freaking Blue Jays, and it just feels like it's in such a state of emergency and panic and despair that is unfixable for the foreseeable future. On a lighter note, go Canada, go. We should have won that game. The officiating was terrible.
Yeah.
But I'm happy they finished fourth in their first tournament. That's awesome. Proud to be Canadian. We're going to go get them next year as well. And also, my Toronto Raptors lit it up against Sacramento.
They did.
Summer League is here. Basketball is back. My joy is back. I'm hoping for at least 40 wins this year, 40 and 42. I know Masai says playing for what, but Masai, I like extra basketball. Let's go get it this year. Scotty Barnes, All-NBA. Quickly, All-Star. RJ Barrett, All-Star.
All right.
Let's go, Raptors.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate I did say call about Canada Soccer or the Raptors Summer League. I absolutely said that. So I appreciate Ryan following along. Look, real quick, disappointing result for Canada Soccer, but I'm kind of with Ryan, honestly. Like, yeah, they should have won that game. They should have won that game. Not enough guys in the box there at the end. And of course, of all people, it's Luis Suarez, like the Uruguayan legend who hadn't played all that much. And then bing, comes in and scores the goal in injury time. That was tough to watch. I got to say, it was tough to watch. Equally tough to watch Kone and Davies miss penalties because they've been so good, but yeah, that was tough. But hey, I mean, like, I'm not sure I expected really anything from the Copa America tournament. So I've been pretty impressed with Jesse Marsh. Also, Grady Dick, 18 points, 10 rebounds, and 6 assists. He might be, like, too good for Summer League, honestly. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. Yeah, on the Blue Jays, you know what? It's probably a good thing that I say this, like, with all love, but it's probably a good thing the fans are, it's, like, not a democracy. Because, I mean, if that was the case, Alex Anthopoulos would have been fired long before 2015. John Gibbons would have been fired long before 2015. Like, those guys would never have had the signature moments they had. So it's probably a good thing that's not the case. Having said that, yeah, change is obviously needed. And yeah, I mean, Ryan was asking the question, who makes those decisions. And I mean, if it's a decision made on Shapiro, then I mean, it's gotta be like the board of directors of Rogers. Right. And I would be surprised because, and I said this a bunch of times as well, but I would just be surprised if these like multi-billion dollar entities, I suppose, make decisions like this
it's not lightly, because I think we all agree change needs to happen, but I would be surprised if it happened certainly before like tomorrow's draft, but or later today, the draft happening in like less than 24 hours. And I would equally be surprised if for that same reason it happened before the trade deadline. But I mean, gosh, we're still talking about them not having made change before like the start of next season. Then I don't have to tell you, because it's not going to be good. Before we take a quick break here, and we'll get to more phone calls after the break, let's go to Adam in Thornhill here on Jay's Talk. Adam, you just heard you have a fan into the other caller. So what you got
know,
for me tonight?
I know. I'm getting juice on the radio, yeah. And I'm going to tell you a couple of things. First of all, I'm going to keep it clean for your show, because I don't want to get you in trouble.
Please, thank you.
Number two, you're putting together a more consistent lineup, you and your producers, because I'm following Ryan in Innisfil, two nights in a row, so that's good. A couple of things. To his point of what he was referring to, he's absolutely right. You'd rather see a better team than a pretty stadium. My point last night about Shapiro and complimenting him was more of an indictment on how bad it's been for Atkins, because even being given all the resources that he has, and still not being able to do it, whereas other GMs maybe in smaller markets are more handicapped by budgetary restrictions and other things. So that was sort of my point. It wasn't so much to just throw bouquets at the positives, but it was just having a fair assessment on the job that Shapiro has done as president of baseball operations. So a couple things. I called in a few days ago and I mentioned to you that I believe that they should trade, you know, Gausman and Bassett and as some contracts that are on the books for next year. And you responded to me by saying, well, then who the heck is going to pitch for this team? Well, my point is that A, their value is never going to be higher. When we're prepared to win, they won't be here anyway. You could recoup a lot more assets, especially if you're willing to eat part of the contract for this year and get them off the books for next year. But what it'll also do is, what I don't want to see happen is the Blue Jays go on a bit of a heater, win 74 games, miss the playoffs by 10, and we're picking 13th in next year's draft or 15th. I'd rather see them win 64 games and be essentially enrolled, if you want to call it that, into the draft lottery and maybe come out with the number one overall pick. So by trading a Gausman or a Bassett, not only are you recouping the assets, you're also clearing them off your books for next year to be able to have more room to potentially sign Bo and Vladdy. But you're also, like, you're done this year anyway. There's only 66 games left, and you're not making the playoffs. So why not try and get a better draft pick next year? Much like the Rangers, if you looked at last year, they sucked 2 years ago. They drafted number four in last year's draft, got Wyatt Langford, still went on to win the World Series. And now this year, they have him implemented as a core piece moving forward to their already World Series winning team. So those are the kind of things you have to do. Second of all, last thing I'll say, when you look at all these pieces that we're potentially moving in terms of the UFAs, like a Kevin Kiermaier or a Justin Turner, individually, they're not going to yield a big return. But if you stack them as part of like a bigger deal, some franchise might look at that. Like if you look at the Dodgers, they need some help right now with Betts and Muncy being out. They're not getting productivity at third base. Well, a Justin Turner, who would be their sixth or seventh best hitter in that lineup, that's okay. The problem is when you have a talent like Turner, you're asking him to be your middle of the order bat. Well, then he can't do it because that's not who he is. But if he's your sixth or seventh best player, that might be a cheaper option for Dodgers to go to rather than for them to, you know, seek out a more name type player from another organization that will cost them more prospect capital. But those are the kind of things that you can do to recoup assets and maximize what you have on your roster.
Hey, Adam, thanks for the call, as always. Yeah, I do think when it comes to the UFAs, like, you got to maximize that value by any means necessary. Right. I totally get it. I mean, I think I like the Dodgers idea. They have some familiarity with Justin Turner. Maybe they would take him back because they're getting basically anything you could possibly get out of Shohei Ohtani, out of Freddie Freeman, out of Will Smith, Mookie Betts, obviously with the fractured hand. But I mean, they're getting basically everything anyone could ask for out of their top four bats, and like nothing from everyone else. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to make some decisions. I think the Phillies, I think I read earlier, they DFA'd Whit Merrifield. I mean, there are teams that are contenders, the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Braves, I'm sure as well, all of whom could use, even if they're not going to be regular contributors, and I know that's what Adam's saying. Like, these guys aren't exactly going to come up here and start hitting like 1-2-3 for any of these teams, obviously. But, you know, you have teams that have holes in whatever fashion. And I think even if you do get back the like relatively small prospects who maybe the ceiling is not the highest, right? Like, we're not talking about getting the Baltimore Orioles top prospect or the, I don't know, the Dodgers best prospect for these guys. I mean, like, what's, you know, we saw tonight and we've seen for a large chunk of the season that there's not a lot left. Like, Leonardo on the text line, or how long would you say the next rebuild will take? Prospects pretty depleted. The future is looking pretty bleak for me. I don't think it's like entirely bleak, but at the same time, I do think that with the farm system being what it is, with all of the most attractive prospects, save maybe one or two who are all effectively injured, already playing for the Blue Jays, then you got to restock it by literally any means necessary. I do agree with that 100%. Let's go to one more caller before we take the break. Nick in Toronto joining us here on Chase Talk. Nick, thanks for staying up late, man. What's up?
Hey, my pleasure. I stay up late every night. But
sweet.
But listen, you were earlier making an analogy between this management team and 2015. Mm. And you said, oh, you know, they would have fired Alex Anthopoulos. But they were going to fire Alex Anthopoulos. That's why he went all in 2015. And that was after only 2.5 years of unmet expectations. And now we're in year 4 of unmet expectations. And it's getting worse. And there's no hope in sight. Anyway, I just don't think that analogy was great. But love your show. And you know, go Jays.
Hey, it's worth. Yeah, Nick, thanks for the call, man. I didn't mean to say... What I meant was if it was up to fans, right? Like, if fans were the ones making the decision-making process, guys like Alex, like not up to Rodgers, but if fans were the ones pulling the trigger, you'd never see progress made. That was the only point. It was just like a dumb one-off on Ryan's comment, because Ryan was like, oh, maybe we should see some democracy. I think what a lot of people envision is the Green Bay Packers is the team I was thinking of, right? The Packers in up there in the NFL, you know how they have like the shareholders, and we kind of like joke about it. Like, I know, like, Joe Bowen, for example, is a shareholder of the Packers, and like Keegan Mathison is a shareholder of the Packers. I'm pretty sure the Shulmans are shareholders of the Packers. I'm like reasonably sure. I should ask Ben. I'm pretty sure they are. I'm like 99% sure they are. But the point is, I think like people want that, but that doesn't actually, like, I mean, let's be honest, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. They're not the ones making the decisions, right? But it was just more than anything. It was just like my only comment was that if you left the decision making process up to like people who are not baseball executives, then like for the most part, you're probably never going to see sustained success, because at the drop of a hat, and I'm totally guilty of this. I'm certainly not blaming the fans by any means. Like, fan is short for fanatic. Like, you deserve to be excited about your team because you love the team. Like, we hear that based on the caller. So I'm by no means saying that fans are bad, but it just, I think if you were to leave it up to fans, you would see a lot more turnover, right? But to Nick's point, I mean, change does need to happen, right? I mean, they've gotten, again, to go back to the point we made off the top, the leash has been very long, and we have gotten collectively, fans, the media, casual eyeballs, people from outside the city, we have gotten to see nothing of consequence. And I said this last night, but I mean, yeah, like the pandemic from when the time the Jays signed Ryu to now, essentially, or let's forget this season, to the end of 2023 season. Regardless of the results in the playoffs, in terms of regular season wins, it's like the third winningest stretch in the history of this franchise, which is like, when you say that, you're like, oh man, that's pretty cool. But if it results in nothing and a depleted farm system and apathy in the fan base, even if the stadium is really nice, and I actually do think it's nice, but I mean, does it really matter? Does any of that matter? No, I would say. The answer to that question is no. So I don't know, like, the season, I often am fond of saying the season is being balanced on a knife's edge. Not anymore, right? Like, no chance anymore. Like, the conversations we're having, even if they were to win tomorrow, even if tomorrow the result was completely flipped, or later today, I guess, because it's late. But even if for this last game before the All-Star break, if the Jays go and just absolutely annihilate the Arizona Diamondbacks to salvage this series and go into the All-Star break with a win, would that really change the long-term aspects of this franchise? Probably not, right? And those are the kinds of conversations we were having after Seattle and San Francisco, that those were fun. Like, it was, you're certainly allowed to have fun when they win, absolutely. But, I mean, I'm not sure it should really change the long-term direction of this franchise. And I'm willing to bet you guys agree. I'm willing to bet that most people, most Jays fans, would agree, all things considered. 416-870-0590, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. 590, 590, name and location is the people's text line. Those are the methods to get in touch with me. We're going to step aside, take a break, come back with more after this. You're listening to Jays Talk. Show Ali with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
That unraveled in a hurry. It's 5-1. You look up in seven quick runs. You know, it's a long road trip. It's a tough road trip. And today was a shitty game all around, you know, from every aspect of it, between base running, offense, defense, pitching. It wasn't a good game. But, yeah, there's only one way to look at it. You know what I mean? We played too many games, and you got to stay upbeat. You got to come out and try to avoid a sweep tomorrow and end the first half on a good note. But today, you know, was not our best game.
That's an understatement, I would say. Yeah, when you lose 12-1, yeah, not your best game. I agree. That's fair. That's John Schneider talking to the media after a 12-1 loss to the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Blue Jays have lost the series. They look to salvage things tomorrow, although it doesn't get that much easier. Yusei Kikuchi will go on the mound. He has had a good game last time out. He filled up the strike zone. A lot of fastballs. Looked pretty good. But going for the Diamondbacks, at least the scheduled starter, one of their few healthy starters that we've seen a lot of over the last couple of years, Zach Gallen's on the mound, and he has been pretty tough over the last several seasons. So let's hope the Blue Jays do not lose 12-1 tomorrow to end the first half of the season, but that is what's on tap. I shouldn't say tomorrow. That's what's on tap for the series finale, at the very least. Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell, and we will get to Trevor in St. Catharines. Trevor, what's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I was one of those people, like a typical fan, I wanted Schneider gone in May, but I think now it's too late. The season's done. I actually liked that caller earlier. I hope that we only win 65 games or less so that we can get a good draft choice. And then come the end of this season, we clean house. Mark Shapiro, Atkins, from everybody from them down, needs cleaned out. We need a new hitting coach. Get rid of Mattingly, Schneider. Everybody needs to go. And maybe even BJ Birdie needs to go too. So, you know, but the season is done. It's done. Stick a fork in it. It's done. So there's no point in firing Schneider now. Let him ride to the end of the season and then gas him with everybody else and start from scratch, you know, because the team is got virtually no prospects. The cupboard is empty, and we're going to have to start from scratch. And I think we need to wait until the season is over to get the right GM and the right president and somebody that knows what they're doing. I'm pining for the days of Alex Anthopoulos now. But anyways, wait till the season is over and guess everybody, including the mascot, and then start from fresh.
What's the problem with Ace? Don't like Ace?
Everybody needs to go. There's just a stink on it that has to go.
All right, there. Thank you, Trevor. Thanks for the call. Appreciate you joining me on Jay's Talk. Yeah, I. That's pretty funny. Ace didn't do anything. Come on, gotta give the guy a break. No, I think on the front office stuff. I mean, I've said this before a couple times. You haven't talked about that recently, but. I'm not sure if there's been any movement on this, actually, but I would love if they do make some kind of big change and they're looking for a new president of baseball operations and a GM and a coach. Again, I'm not sure who the most likely candidate to be coach is. Like, if you want to make it DeMarlo Hale, sure. But again, like I've said many times, like the change has to come from above the manager before you can make bigger changes. But I've always kind of hoped that like Kim Ng, who would be the president of baseball operation, maybe she could do both, honestly. That's what Anthopoulos does for Atlanta, right? But maybe she could do both. But even if it was like her as the president and the Click as the GM, and you operate with a completely new power structure that way, I mean, she was someone who turned the Marlins into a playoff contender in like 1 year, essentially. I think she did a good job going to get Jake Berger out there too. It just, I appreciated what she'd done in a relatively short period of time for Miami. And I mean, maybe playoff contenders is strong, but I mean, considering how not great the Marlins were, and then they made the playoffs last year, albeit to no avail. But I don't know. I think I wouldn't mind seeing someone like her come in and run the ship, try and drive things out there. Let's go back to the phones. Rob in Port Hope joining us here on Jay's Talk. Rob, what's up?
Joel, I always enjoy your show, but I agree with the last caller, and that's why I called in. Like, the obvious, everyone's talking about the Shapiro-Atkins era needs to come to a very quick end. And if they're only going to fire one of them, obviously it's Atkins. I would leave Schneider until you give him the assets. We don't know whether he's a good manager or not. But the other guy that's got to go is Don Mattingly. Everybody's talking, Donnie, baseball is God's gift to baseball. Well, he's not God's gift to coaching. Our offense has collapsed since he got here. I looked it up, and our runs per game this year, 4.05, is the worst it's been except for 1 year in 45 years. So much for Donnie baseball being just offense.
Rob, I'm gonna let you go, Rob. Not because I don't appreciate your point, but I think it's late. I think the Gremlins have taken your phone connection, unfortunately. But I do understand your point. Don Mattingly's got to go. I get it. And you know, one thing that, first of all, I kind of agree that if you're going to make wholesale changes, you might as well make wholesale changes for the hitting coach. I mean, they made such a big deal this past offseason about, like, first of all, I have no idea what Don Mattingly's role was last year. Honestly, like, you know, you usually hear like a little tidbits here and there about like what this guy's doing with the players, what that guy's doing with the players. I don't think I heard a single little peep about what Mattingly did last year in 2023, in a year they also struggled on offense. And then this year, again, huge deal they made about him being the offensive coordinator, which is funny because I spent a lot of Jay's Talk last year, like these kinds of shows, being like, well, it's not like football where they don't have offensive coordinators. Well, they went out and did that. They now have an offensive coordinator, and the offense has looked anything but coordinated. Yeah, it's looked a little bit better in the last like month or so, but it has largely not looked good for most of the season. So, I mean, like, if you're going to give him the title and say he's responsible for it, and then it's bad, then you kind of also have to wear that responsibility. To Ryan's point from earlier, not a lot of accountability there, right? Don Mattingly did say in the preseason or in spring training before the season that he did not see a lot of power in this lineup. And I guess he wasn't wrong, but I agree that he probably should go along with a lot of others. I mean, gosh, of anything that struck me from this game, I got to say, watching Matt Haig. So Varsho hits a triple for the second night in a row. He must really like going back to play at Chase Field, right? But there was a point in this game, where you could see the shot of like kind of the sideways shot of the dugout. And who is Varsho talking to? Matt Haig, right? And Matt Haig, by all accounts, has helped Spencer Horwitz. He has helped David Schneider, who, albeit, is struggling, certainly. So I'm not sure how much of a point in his favor that is, but he has helped Ernie Clement. He's helped a lot of the young guys, Leo Jimenez, who have, generally speaking, liked. I think he's a major leaguer, but like, he has helped a lot of these guys. And I mean, if you really are handing things over to the Buffalo Boys, and I mean, Matt Haig is probably also one of the Buffalo Boys at this point, right? So that's all really, I think, is what it is. I think if you're going to make wholesale changes, and I know there are some people who disagree with like, oh, the hitting coach doesn't make a difference. And maybe Matt Haig, if we're talking about guys getting different kinds of responsibilities, then, you know, as legendary of a hitter Don Mattingly was when I was younger, I mean, this doesn't seem to make a huge difference now. So you might as well make a change there too. So I'm with you. Shane in Brockville, Ontario on the text line says, I do believe this team would have a better record with a different manager and coaches. This manager continues to platoon and play all these matchup games. We are the worst team in the league at doing so. Many times we have won a couple of games, and the next game the lineup will change because of a matchup or a platoon reason. Clement not playing for three games after batting 600 on a homestand. Horwitz not playing every night, etc. Look, the reason I will disagree, Shane, is because my point largely in a larger scale is simply that if you took John Schneider out of the equation and you put DeMarlo Hale into that situation, or Mattingly or anyone else, I think the same decision-making process would have taken place, because again, I don't really think a lot of this is on John Schneider's, like, it's up to him, I should say. I'm not saying it's on him, because he, as the manager, he has to wear it, but I'm just not sure he's the one pulling the trigger ultimately. Like, if, because the truth is, like, if we do believe that it's like some kind of spreadsheet or something making these decisions, then I don't know, like, I could do that job, right? You guys could do that job. Any of us could do that job, right? And I think that's why we need to see a change from above him, because it's like the whole way they make decisions that needs to change. I wanted to get to a couple things before we go. First of all, I see Maddie in, I just lost the text. Here it is. Maddie on the text line. Maddie says, Star Wars Episode 2 should never be placed in the same sentence as Rise of Skywalker. Come on. Super underrated movie. I'm actually not sure which one you're praising here, Maddie. Are you saying that Attack of the Clones is good or Rise of Skywalker is good? For my end, they're both bad. They're both atrocious movies. I never want to see those movies ever again. Fire them into the sun, honestly. I say this as a big Star Wars fan. Honestly, like, I have a Star Wars tattoo, for God's sakes. Like, I really like Star Wars. I'm a huge nerd. I totally admit it. But they're bad movies. Come on. Like, they're not good. Let me get to a couple things before we go. Jose Barrios, 4 innings, 7 hits, 5 runs, all of which were earned, 4 walks, 90 pitches. Here's some wild stuff on Barrios. 90 pitches. On those 90 pitches thrown, he generated 0 whiffs. Just the 4th time for Barrios in 231 career starts that Barrios failed to strike out a single batter when pitching at least 4 innings. Like, he was not good tonight, did not have great command. And in the rare occasion he did throw competitive pitches, there was some bad luck, like on the Herrera broken bat single. But by and large, he was not good tonight, and he knew it. Like, it was almost impossible for anyone not to know, but there was a shot of Barrios walking in the dugout after the bottom of the 4th, before the top of the 5th, and he smashed his glove into the dugout bench. And I honestly think that might be the most emotion we have ever seen from Barrios. Like, honestly, maybe ever. And here's what he had to say on that.
I mean, honestly, like, I know I haven't been pitching well lately. So, I mean, I am a competitor and a winning guy. And also, I want to be a great teammate, and I want to do my best to help my team win ballgame. So tonight, I was able to do that. So that's why I feel frustrated and mad with myself. Like, I mean, I don't pitch well tonight, and that's why we lose.
I feel kind of bad for Barrios. God, it makes me kind of sad for the guy, because he, like, knew he didn't have it. He was really struggling. He couldn't locate. And by all accounts, every time I've heard anyone talk to him, they say he's very much a team first guy. So that's tough. But I mean, he has not pitched well. I mean, for a good chunk of time now, before tonight's start, in 40 2/3 innings pitched since June 5th, which was his first start of the month in June, 25 earned runs, 11 walks for Barrios, an ERA of 5.53 over those 7 starts. That was entering play tonight, and I cannot imagine that went down at the very least. Real quick on the bullpen, Bowden Francis might have been the only kind of good thing. I mean, 2 innings pitched, 1 hit, no runs, 2 walks, 1 strikeout. He actually got the Jays' first strikeout of the game when he came in, because Barrios didn't get a single one. I guess I hope he just finds some consistency. It's not a word we've used a lot when it comes to this Jays season. Maybe he's still an option for middle inning relief, because the Jays don't have a lot of those guys. And maybe we feel that, as collectively fans of the media, that starting ship has sailed. And as we know, the Jays don't have a ton of reliable options in that middle part of the bullpen. Pop and Pearson, boy, Pop allows 4 hits, a 3-run jack to Carroll. Pearson allows 2 home runs, 1 to Suarez, another to Carroll. I think we just know what they are, right? Like, there have been glimmers, I guess, but the ceiling is capped at a pretty low point, which is, for those guys specifically, which is really unfortunate, because I want them to succeed. Like, Pop's Canadian, you want him to succeed. Pearson has been a high draft pick for a long time, and you want him to succeed, and has gotten a lot of chances, but I think we know they are. That's the truth, right? Also, Corbin Carroll, 6 of the 12 runs driven in tonight came from him. So well done to the Jays for fixing what's been ailing him, I guess. The reigning NL Rookie of the Year, driving in 6 of 12 against the Jays. Oof. Anyways, so the matchups don't get that much easier tomorrow. Yusei Kikuchi, Zach Gallen, Jimmy Garcia apparently on his way to Arizona, so maybe he pitches tomorrow. I said last night that maybe we don't get there, but I've heard he wants to play, so I guess we'll see Jimmy tomorrow. Appreciate you all being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Halifax and Dartmouth in Nova Scotia. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Eric Smith, Madison Shipman, Tom Young, Michael Jose Collins, I'm Sho. I'm out of here. Jesse Rubinoff is back with me to put a bow on the first half. Sleep fast, everyone. We'll talk to you later.